Things that they call the shelter, the rest of the Good afternoon, anyone? Everyone? So I guess we're going to begin. It looks like Friday afternoons are tough when you're competing with a beautiful sunny day outside, but we'll start nonetheless, and if there's a few stragglers, they could just walk in. So I'll begin by introducing myself. I'm Giovanna Sebastiani. I'm the Associate Director of Grants and Agreements in the Office of Sponsored Research, and particularly my team works mostly with biomedical opportunities. And hence why we're here doing this CIHR Foundation session. Some of you may have expected for Melissa Lee to be here, who is our regular CIHR grants officer, but Melissa actually left our university about a month ago. She moved to the United States with her family. And so as of right now, we don't have a CIHR officer, so I'm it. So you're going to have to bear with me if I don't know all the details for this opportunity, but we'll probably get through this fine. That said, we do have a new grants officer that's starting on Monday. Her name is Andrea, and she will be the main contact for CIHR for both this competition, the foundation, and project. But we'll all be working as a team to get this done. So for those of you that haven't, a reminder, there's a attendance sheet going around. If you've already registered through the registration page, then it's not a problem. We have your email. If not, please make sure to sign it, because we'll be sending out the slides as well as the session is being recorded, so we'll be able to send out the link if anybody wants to rewatch it. And also we'll be sending out a survey for you to fill out, and we really appreciate your feedback, so please, I'd ask you. It's an online survey. Please take a few minutes just to fill it out. So with that, I'll begin. So today's agenda is... Can you guys hear me if I'm this far? Yes? Okay. So today's agenda is... I'll do a small presentation where I'll go over the funding opportunity overview with a little bit about the funding opportunity itself. After that, we have Dr. Eduardo Franco, who's a foundation grant holder from the first competition that was held in 2014. He'll speak to some tips and do's and don'ts about when you're applying for this opportunity. And then we were supposed to have another speaker, Ellen Grumberg, who is an early career investigator who won the foundation scheme during this last competition, but unfortunately her child is sick today and she isn't able to make it. But she had prepared slides, and Carol Guttar, who's the senior officer in my team, will be going through those slides. So that should be helpful as well. And then we'll have a question and answer period. Of course, if you have questions during the presentation, just feel free to ask. So the foundation grants are basically one of the two investigator-initiated open programs that CIHR presently offers. Together with the project scheme, these are the two major open programs that exist at CIHR. And the foundation grants were basically created in part to decrease burden on researchers in that they are very long grants for most mid and senior career researchers, up to 7 years. And it basically gives the researchers more freedom to only apply once and then have a long period of time. The goal here is to provide funding to the leaders in the field, and leaders across all, the pillars of CIHR research, be it health research, health services research, health outcomes research. But the key word is health. So what the type of research that you are doing has to be in line with the mission of CIHR. What else can I say? So these are just the objectives for the foundation, which you can find on their website. I won't go through it, but you know what it is. So foundation, there's one competition per year, and this is it. This year, there's going to be a $225 million dedicated to this foundation competition. As opposed to what researchers may be used to, the foundation grant opportunity is a program-based application. So you're not applying for one specific project which lasts 3 or 5 years. You're applying for longer term, a vision. You're applying for a program of research. So you should stay away from just pitching a small project. As I alluded to, these grants are for either 7 years if you're a mid-career investigator or a senior investigator, or they're 5 years for new or early career investigators. Important in this competition is that the early career investigators will be treated and ranked separately in a cohort made up of only early and new career investigators, as opposed to the first foundation scheme where everybody was in one pool. Last year and this year, the early career investigators are assessed and ranked with their peers. So who is eligible to apply? This is the first foundation grant call that is actually open to all researchers. The previous two pilots that that CIHR held were with a restricted pool. Here, all you need to be is an independent researcher with a full-time academic appointment where you are allowed to supervise students and do independent research. Also, the foundation grants, grants have a different terminology. So the main applicant is now referred to as a program leader. And in order to be able to apply, you just have to, by the registration deadline, which is September 20th, have a full-time academic appointment. For early career investigators, while the same applies, because the registration kind of got delayed this year, the starting period for their counting, whether you're an early career or not, is actually on July 27th, 2016. So earlier new career investigators have to have had an appointment between 0 and 60 months from July 27th, 2016. So essentially July 27th, 2011. You will notice that when you do your, when you fill in your CV for this opportunity, there's an area to describe your leaves. So if you, especially if you are an earlier new career investigator and you've, if you've had a leave, it's very important to document the leave there because that will take out the time in your 0 to 60 months for the counting. Okay. People that presently have a foundation grant are not eligible to apply, and people that hold CERCs are not eligible to apply until year 6 of their grant. What else do I need to say? As I alluded to, the main applicant on a foundation grant is known as the program leader. Forcibly, the program leader is responsible for the overall direction of the research. In addition, the program leader is also the administrative coordinator, so equivalent to what used to be the nominated principal applicant. The administrative coordinator assumes all responsibility for all administrative matters, and of course, forcibly, he's the program leader. It is possible to apply with more than one program leader for one foundation grant. So you can be two program leaders or more. What's very critical is that if you apply as a pair, I've never seen more than a pair, but let's say two program leaders, what's evaluated is your joint contribution. So you have to have a history of working together and getting funding together in order to be successful in the foundation opportunity. But the majority of people will apply as single program leaders. So I would say last year, and I can speak for the plus applications I've seen, maybe on 60 or so applications, we probably had two go in as joint program leaders. Dr. Franco, who was in last year, went in as a joint. So he, on his, there are actually two program leaders. So he can speak to that a little bit later. But the majority will be single. Another point to remember is that if you're going in as joint program leaders and you're an early career investigator and a senior investigator, you do not go into the early career pool. You remain in the other pool, in the regular pool. So think about it. Also, you should... in addition to the program leader in your application, you're also going to have to, if you want... include some program experts, and these are essentially in the old system everybody else. So your co-investigators, your trainees, your collaborators, they're all looped, they all fall into the program expert role. Okay. So the foundation grant opportunity is a multi-stage application process. The first stage is the registration. The registration deadline is actually next Tuesday, September 13 at 8 p.m. You register on ResearchNet, and I'll go into a little bit more detail after that. After the registration, there's a stage one application. The deadline for the stage one application is October 13. There will be a notice of decision after the stage one application, and you will either be invited to stage two or not. So the stage one notice of decisions will come in February, and the stage two applications will be due mid-March, March 14. The final notice of decision next year is going to come quite late, even later than this year. So the notice of decisions for the overall foundation are expected to come August 3rd of next year, with a funding start date of July 1st, 2017.
Germany?
Yes?
Do you know if this timetable has been changed because of discussions, the growth test against the CNHRS?
I can't read with the screen in the way. You got to put this in. I think the whole competition has been delayed because of what happened over the summer. But technically, anything that's discussed is not going to be implemented for a foundation scheme. So if there's changes in peer review or changes in application formats or any of that, at least not for this stage one. It will apply for the moment for the project scheme. And maybe next year's foundation scheme, they might make some adjustments. But from what we've been told so far, those discussions should not impact this competition. But, of course, there's just the natural delays. And I'm assuming they'll be extra careful when assigning reviewers for this competition to make sure that things work. Yeah. Yeah, essentially. So, I mean, I guess you'll be able to... Exactly. No. I mean, McGill will not open accounts for you until we have a notice of decision in hand. So if the notice of decisions come August 3rd, I'd like to believe that perhaps by August 10th you'll have a fund, and we'll advance whatever money you've got, but yeah... Unless, Olga, do you want to correct me? Right. No, so basically, no. In the foundation scheme, you're not really allowed letters of support or letters of reference. The only letters you will be allowed is you can have a partner for your foundation scheme if you like, and if they provide some in-kind contribution or a cash contribution, then you can have a letter of support from your partner who has to be named and become an official partner on your grant. So, as I said, the registration deadline is September 13th, Tuesday at 8 p.m. The registration is mostly administrative, but you do have to upload the registration CV. There's a specific foundation CV in the Canadian Common CV, and where you do have to include some information, mostly about funding history, I guess mostly on your affiliation. There's nothing major, but it does take time. If you don't have a Canadian Common CV, you should get that going because it might be quite busy Monday or Tuesday. And there is a one-page summary that you will have to include in your registration. This summary will be used to find reviewers for your application, and also for the reviewers to declare a conflict of interest and their expertise level, comfort level with the subject matter.
So I found information about, you know, the CV can be changed at the later stages, the budget is just very preliminary, the ballpark figure, all of that. But the one-page summary, can you change that as well or not?
Yes, you can change that. The only thing that you cannot change is your program leaders. So if you register as one program leader, you remain one program leader. If you're two, you remain two. You cannot change program leaders. But just be careful about changing the summary because they will use it to find reviewers.
No, if you need to update a few things, you're not bound by the text that you submit.
No, correct.
Okay,
if industry offers you materials in kind, does it constitute an official partner or not?
I'm inclined to say not, but it's kind of vague. It has to be a partner that they have to be able to provide a letter of support. In my opinion, and it's purely my opinion because there's not enough guidance, it has to be a strong partner, someone who's more involved in your application and in your program than just providing. I think it doesn't hurt you to put it. I don't know if it helps you unless they're providing a lot. That, in my opinion, again, there's not enough guidance for me to have a better opinion of that.
I have an example on that. So I thought about that, like, we talked about my colleagues. We didn't have a situation like that.
Okay. So now we'll get to the full application. And the only other thing that can happen at your registration is that CIHR will look at your eligibility. And if you identify yourself as an early career and they decide that you're not, that's the only real change that they can make at that point. So the Stage 1 application, if you haven't done a foundation grant before, is very structured. So there are text boxes with certain character limits, and you cannot, basically you could just write text. I believe you can underline, you can bold. I think that's the extent of the embellishments you can make to your application. You cannot paste figures. I don't believe you could paste tables. It's really just text. The application is quite short. It has one summary page, which could technically be the same summary as for your registration, or you can update it as you feel necessary. Then the meat of the application is, one, your program leader CV, and I'll talk about it a little bit. But there are two main sections, which are this circle that you see here. 75% of the value or of the rating that you will get will be dependent on your caliber as an applicant. So here they'll be looking at leadership, the significance of your contributions, and your productivity, each at 25%. And then, and you will have half a page each, or 1,750 characters, to talk about each of these criteria. You'll then have, the other component is your vision and the direction of your program. And here, again, you have one page, 3,500 characters, and that's worth 25%. For a grand total of 100. So a little bit about the program leader CV. Again, there's a specific foundation CV that you will need to complete. It has certain specific limits for the different sections. So with regards to publications, it's the last 7 years. With regards to funding history, it's the last 7 years. With regards to presentations, up to 25, supervisory activities, up to 7 years, recognitions up to 10, knowledge translation activities up to 10, If you click this link here, Foundation CV, when you get the presentation, it'll take you directly to the CIHR page where they describe in more detail all the specific limits. I didn't put them all here, but this is an active link. Again, what's important when you're preparing your CV is that you want to include things that you will then talk about in your leadership section, in your other sections. You want to be able to give examples in your CV. Put in your CV whatever you will refer to when you're describing how wonderful you are. So use your CV as a tool. I said this before, but if you're applying as two program leaders, you have to show synergy. You have to show that you work together, you have received funding together. While each of you will be able to put one program leader's CV, obviously, they should show synergy. As always, this is left over from Melissa. When you're uploading your publications, it's always a good trick to include an asterisk next to your students because it allows reviewers to easily identify which papers you have students on. In general, when you're filling in your application, before you fill out your application, you should really take the time to read, of course, the application instructions that are on the CIHR website, and I've put the links at the end of the presentation, but also the peer review manual. There's a specific peer review manual for the foundation, and in that manual, you see exactly what the reviewers are asked to judge. So when you're talking about leadership, for example, I mean, it sounds self-explanatory, but you want to show that you have a strong reputation in your field, in your community, that you have built networks across Canada, internationally, that you're capable of, directing big research programs, that you have a history where you're able to find adequate funding, recruit competent trainees, that people in your lab have gone on to great things. And each of these statements you make in your little section, you should point to the relevant areas in your CV. You only have half a page, so as much as possible, you have to put in your CV and refer to your CV as opposed to using a lot of words to cover something simple. So if I go back to the peer review manual for stage one leadership, this is what the reviewers are asked to look at. So, and I'll just read it. So, is the applicant widely recognized in their field, demonstrating a history of holding influential roles, inspiring others, mobilizing communities, and advancing the direction of their field? So basically, when you're writing your one half a page, these are the questions you want to answer. The second question, has the applicant demonstrated the ability to successfully establish resource and lead direct a program of research, which should include securing the required resources, ensuring effective collaboration, building mentoring training activities, or incorporating knowledge translation strategies in their research? So this is what the reviewers are going to use to rank your application. Okay? So leadership is 25%. Then we go on to the significance of the contributions. Again, half a page. You can read this, but again, this is what the reviewers are asked to judge. Has the applicant significantly advanced knowledge or its translation into improved healthcare, health systems, or health outcomes? Has the applicant engaged, trained, or launched the career paths of promising individuals in research and/or other health-related non-academic fields? So you, yeah.
So here we're going to start in with the fact that the CV limits to 7 years before, right? And there might be trainees that we had that have gone on to be directors of institutes, but we can't list them because they're past it.
Well, I think in that scenario, you can
slot it in the text.
I think you could slot it in the text.
If you can't do what you said to refer to the CV.
Yeah, sometimes you can't, but also one of the things that I think is coming out of foundation is that they also want you, like, it's what have you done recently, mm-hmm. as opposed to what you did 30 years ago. So I think that seems to come, I mean, that's what I've seen from the reviews, things that you've done, unless they're seminal and they've changed science entirely, then you could put weight on them, but otherwise, it's what have you done recently, in the last 7 years or so. Okay. Productivity, so this should be fairly straightforward. How many papers do you have? How many, where are they published? You know, how many trainees have you had? How many, you know. This is what the reviewers are asked to judge. Has the applicant demonstrated an outstanding level of research outputs based on prior work? Has the applicant's previous work generated high-quality research outputs? Okay. Yep. It actually, it does. So if you've taken a leave, you have to justify your leave, and it has to be in your CV, and you have to. But you're allowed to add one page extra to your publications. So you could put the last 7 years. Sorry, I hope I get this right. But you're allowed to add one additional page to account for the time that doesn't fall in the last 7 years.
Okay.
Do you know what I mean? So let's say you had a one-year break. Your CV will not allow you to take anything beyond 7 years, but you could add one page that will be the additional year. Does that make sense?
So on the CRHR instructions,
yeah.
A big part of productivity is the training that you've done in the past.
The training that you've done?
Yeah, training.
For trainees.
Yeah. In your notes, you had the previous sections on the
Well, off the bat, I guess it could be both. I think productivity could be more the numbers that you've done, whereas if you've trained someone, if you've launched that's your contribution to the world, is that you've launched this great scientist. I think both. Off the top of my head, I can't remember the distinction. I mean, we could look more. Off the top of my head, I really don't remember. So I can get back to you if you give me your name. I can read. Okay. I will. And also, like, I mean, ultimately, we did our best with the slides, but I'll just get to the end just to show you. I've actually put links. Here you go. Backspace. So the peer review manual foundation. If you click on that, you'll get to the peer review manual. There it spells out the adjudication criteria exactly for each of the
questions.
Same
ones last time, right? They have an advisor, they want advisors.
They haven't revised very much.
That's where the most criticized
was. Yeah, no, it's still there. I think it's, compared to your year, because you were 2 years ago already.
Yeah.
It's changed, but it's relatively the same as last year. Yeah. Okay. So I'm sorry, I will look into that and I will send an email to everyone. Okay. Vision. So the other component of the Stage 1 application is your vision and program direction. It counts for 25% and you have one page. So here is where you basically describe what your vision is for the next 5 or 7 years, depending if you're an early career investigator or mid-senior level. You want to include your goals, your overall objectives, your expected outcomes, the contributions you're going to make to health research, health outcomes, health systems, and what the significance and impact of these will be to Canadian society. You want to articulate a full program in a clear, concise, coherent way. Well, you only have one page, so you don't have a choice but to be concise. But that's what you need to do. Your vision should be forward-looking, creative, and appropriately ambitious. I think I've kind of covered everything there. And again, the adjudication criteria, this is what the reviewers are looking at, are the vision, goals, overall objectives, and potential contributions of the proposed program of research well-defined and well-articulated in the context of a logical career progression of the program leader? Is the vision forward-looking, creative, appropriately ambitious? Does the vision aim to significantly advance knowledge or its translation to improve healthcare, health systems, or health outcomes? And this is worth 25% of your mark. That's essentially the application. There are no room for figures, no room for... You don't, in your stage one application, there's no program experts to list. It's really all about you, your CV, and your vision. There is one page you can add, which is you could include references, additional references. And in your references, what we suggest is that you use an adequate marking system, P1, P2, or R1, R2, R3, R4, R5. So when you refer to the references, you keep the character use very short.
There's one thing that I'm just looking at the instructions here. It doesn't have any characters for the reference. It's actually the same space you have.
Yeah.
Where they're both.
Yes. So that's the stage one application as a whole. I have a next series of slides that talk about the stage two application. I think I will just go briefly over this one page because stage two is quite far. It's in February. And for people that do advance to stage two, we will have other information sessions where we will invite previous winners to perhaps come and provide more. But just so that you have an idea, the stage two application is also relatively short, longer than it has been that it was the first foundation, but still. You have, again, the one-page summary. And in this application, you're looking more at the quality of the program. This is where you elaborate on your program. You further elaborate on your vision. And this is where you talk about the quality of the expertise, the experience, in mentorship and training, and the quality of the environment where you work. So 50% of your mark will go to the quality of your program, where you describe your research concept and your research approach, 3 pages each. The other 50% will go to how well you describe the expertise that you're bringing together for your program, your mentorship and training activities, and the quality of your support environment. So it's 20% expertise, 20% mentorship and training, and 10% the quality of your support environment. There's another half page to justify your budget, and that is the whole application. So I won't, unless you guys really want me to, but we have two speakers coming, I will not go through the stage two in detail. But again, the peer review manual has the adjudication criteria and describes this very, very, very well.
What fraction of the stage one applications move forward?
It was, I think, at McGill, I could give you McGill if you'd like, was 35% about. When that was McGill's success rate. Nationally, it was 34%. Nationally, it was 29%. 2014 was
more or less the same as the first one, the sentence you have.
A third.
And the fourth issue you were invited to just next to.
Yeah, last year there were 900. So last year was 910 for mid-career and senior. Mid-career and senior was 910, 265 advanced. And no, that's it. Sorry, I'm just looking at two tables here. Yeah, it's about that, 35%. I'll give you an idea for the budget because it could help you decide whether you want to apply for foundation at all. So the budget is that you will be allowed to ask for your foundation application is in line with your previous CIHR open operating grant funding. So this means your MOP grants, your, if you have proof of principle grants, your knowledge to action grants, but open funding, not any targeted or strategic funding. So if you have any team grants, if you have any strategic grants, those do not go into the calculation for your budget for foundation.
And nor will the ones that say grants or...
No, it's really...
No,
it's really only your CIHR, essentially for most of you, MOP funding. They take, how they calculate is a little bit different. I've seen different variations, but basically they look at your last 5 to 7 years. They calculate your average annual amount over those years. They take that number, they multiply by 7 or 5. Yeah, they do the correction factor, I think 2% per year for inflation. But so for people that advance past stage one, so before you submit your stage two application, CIHR will send you your baseline budget. That is essentially what they want to give you. And if you you have to justify for any amount above that. I haven't seen too many people get more. So, for new investigators that have never held CIHR funding, we've seen around 150 to 200 per year. So for 5 years, anywhere from 750 to 1 million for the 5 year. And I think what's important also to remember is that if you hold a foundation grant, you can no longer apply to project scheme or any other or other foundation.
So that's the way you're getting.
So for a new investigator, and Ellen or Carol will address that a little bit in her presentation, that's the budget you're with. So you have to judge whether, if your intention is to grow your lab, and I am not a researcher, you probably know that better than me, that's the budget you're looking at. You won't be able to get additional project grants to support you, you'll have your one foundation grant. From CIHR, you'll be able to apply to other strategic initiatives, team grants, that sort of thing, but not to project scheme.
Well,
it's better that you know before. So right now, this call, you can apply to both foundation and you can apply to two project schemes as nominated principal applicant. So right now you can apply, and for a new investigator that might be the way to go. You can apply to, when you find out whether you're funded or not is in August. The project schemes results are gonna come out before that. So if you actually get a project scheme, it's supposed to roll into your eventual foundation. How monetarily that's going to work, I don't know yet. They haven't, but they said that if you successfully get a project scheme now, it will roll into a successful foundation. You won't have to choose. You could have both. Well, you won't have both. Your project scheme will terminate, but it'll roll into your foundation.
Do operating grants
Anything targeted? Oh, you can apply to both, yes,
yeah.
But they won't, I'm sorry, they don't go into calculation of your budget.
Okay, but they also, you're not going to get...
No, you can...
No,
the only grants that will get terminated will be your open operating grants. So it's your MOPs, your proof of principle, your... There used to be an industry collaborative research projects, I think knowledge to action. Those are about... There might be a few others that I can't remember, but those are them. So I'll just want to say a little word about peer review. The peer review process also has been revamped. Now it's essentially your application will be reviewed by up to 5 reviewers, independent reviewers. The concept of committees does not really exist anymore. So the reviewer will get your application. Each reviewer will get, I don't know, 10, 12, 15 applications. They review the applications, and then there's an online discussion. So the 4 or 5 reviewers that have your application are supposed to log online and have a discussion about your application. After the discussion, each reviewer will rank his or her reviews. So the ranking is what counts. How you are ranked is what goes into calculating your consolidated ranking. So when you get your reviews, you'll see letters. So instead of using the number scale that they used to use in the past, now you see outstanding, O++, O+, O, excellent, E++, E+, E, good, fair, poor, and some comments. These reviewer comments and letters basically do not go into calculating your score. So you can get O++ everywhere, and you could still end up with a bad ranking. It sounds counterintuitive, but if I'm reviewing 5 grants, or 10 grants, let's say 5 grants, and I have 5 really excellent grants, I can quote everybody O++ or O+ or O, but in the end, I'm going to have to rank them 1 to 5. So they have to break ties. There's no ties. So you can get, and we've heard as a research office, we've heard a lot of feedback from researchers saying, but how come my ranking is so bad? My score is so bad. I have O++ everywhere. Or maybe not O++, but O everywhere. And it's because of that concept. They have to rank. And then CIHR does the magic with all the rankings, and they come up with a consolidated ranking. And that consolidated ranking is ranking all the applications. Okay? So these letters that you see are just a tool for the reviewer to help him or her rank the applications. But they don't go into your final score. So stage 1 is an online review. And at the end of stage 1, you'll get a result whether you advance or not to stage 2. The stage 2 review is the same thing. It's online. Each application is supposed to have five reviewers. And I think for the most part, Foundation, it's been consistent. Most people have 4 or 5 reviews. Again, the online discussion. And at the end of that, the ranking, applications that then there's a certain number of applications that go to this final assessment stage. So when they finish stage 2, when they have the ranking, you'll have a certain number that are ranked very high with no standard deviation or little standard deviation. They're technically in the funded pool. Then you'll have the ones that are really bad and at the bottom, and then you'll have the gray zone. So the ones in the middle, because they're in the middle, or because they have very large variations, those are the ones that will be discussed in this final assessment review committee. And that's a face-to-face meeting, and it involves a lot of the chairs that were overseeing the stage 2 application. But this final assessment face-to-face meeting is a committee of varied people, varied expertises, they're not necessarily expertise that have the expertise for your application. Okay. So I've already gone through the timelines. Just a quick word about McGill deadlines. So for registration, you just registered, there's no deadlines. For people applying through McGill Office of Sponsored Research, our internal deadline is October 3rd, which I believe is a Monday morning. As you know, we need an OSR checklist. As we did the previous 2 years, all we ask is that you submit to us an OSR checklist signed by the program leader. Our office will take care of getting all the other signatures for you. So we'll get your department chair signature and we'll get your ADR signature. In order for us to do that, we absolutely need your checklist by October 3rd. If you don't submit your checklist by October 3rd, unfortunately, you will have to get your own signatures. But we do need the OSR checklist before we submit your application. If, of course, as always, we have a review, if anybody is interested in the review by us. The deadline for that also is October 3rd, but obviously we accept up to the date. We'll review them on a first-come, first-served basis.
That's an admin review.
It's an admin review. Yeah, I mean, depending how many we get, I'm a scientist, as is the new grants officer, is also a PhD, she's coming to us from Yale. So, I mean, we could read, it'll make sense to us, but obviously it's not an in-depth scientific review, we're not, you know. The Faculty of Medicine at McGill is not having a review at stage one. They will have a mandatory review at stage two. For those of you at the MNI is having a scientific review. And their optimum deadline is September 19th, their absolute deadline September 26th. At the RIMUHC, I believe they are also not having a review at stage one, but if anybody does want a review, they should contact Jenny and she will try and find some reviewers. And at stage two, we will not even need a checklist for purchases. So as I've said, all of these links, when you get the presentation, are active. Just click on them and you'll be taken to the right. I really recommend that if there's one document you're going to read, it's the peer review manual, because it tells you exactly what the reviewers are looking for, and you should try and address those points. Also, we'll send this presentation. We'll also send our standard internal guide that we have. That's it. CIHR announced the other day that they'll be holding webinars, question and answer webinars. These are the dates. They interestingly have a Q&A the day before the deadline, for what it's worth. But you have to register for these. Again, the links are active. If you click on them, it'll take you to the registration page.
I tried registering. I wasn't able to.
Oh, I registered. I registered using Internet Explorer. For the first one. Okay. So this is just contact information. As I said, we have a new officer starting Monday, Andrea Maimi. Please don't overwhelm her on Monday, but anytime after that will be fine. Dahlia is the person you have to send your OSR checklist to, and she'll take care of getting all the signatures. And if you're at one of the affiliate institutes, these are all the contact people there. So now it's my pleasure to introduce Dr. Eduardo Franco. Dr. Franco is a professor in the Department of Epidemiology and Biostatistics, as well as the Department of Oncology, where he is also the chair of that department. Dr. Franco is a James McGill professor. He's the Minda de Ginsburg Chair in Oncology. And as most relevant to our session, he's the foundation grant holder from 2014, the inaugural competition.
The one that perhaps doesn't no longer applies because the rules of the game have changed so much, perhaps from 2014, a little bit. I was just comparing the... So more space has been given for relevant stuff.
You had less space.
What I have in terms of slides are essentially what you had.
In fact, okay, well, slides you can just ad lib.
My slides are, they're essentially the a copy. They're an exact copy, in fact. Of the of the four pages. So if you go to the website and you just copy and copy from the website the instructions from the various tasks, CHR calls tasks, as you put together the foundation grant, you know, I just compartmentalized them in a number of slides, which is essentially what Giovanna had for the discussion. And, you know, these would be my talking points here. So I'd rather do it interactively with you as you ask questions, because I'm going by memory here. And my memory is getting a little foggy here because I submitted for the first pilot. And by definition, I got funded for 7 years, so I shouldn't worry anymore, right? And until I retire, because it will be exactly the point that I'll be ready to retire. But the reality is it is for all of the people who got foundation grants, is that, well, ideas keep coming, and they need more money to do additional research. So I have no recourse whatsoever, as Giovanna mentioned, to going to a project grant, a project scheme competition, but rather I have to bend myself backwards to identify a calls for proposals. And good enough, CIHR, the different institutes of CIHR, they do provide these calls, and so we're applying to a couple of those. I did do, you know, experience counts a lot. So as you recall, many of you sat in this very auditorium here when the whole gossiping that CIHR was going to go through the different foundation and they called something the idea, they initially started calling idea grants and then team grants. They didn't want to use the concept of team grants because they had team grants before, and this is not it. Team grants is if some of you had applied, you know, you had to write 50 single space type written pages to submit one of those. It's equivalent to a PO1 in the NIH terminology. So they came up with this, and as you may recall, we had sessions here where Janet O'Bain came here, and from this very podium here, she presented to the full auditorium, and she was bombarded by questions. People were very concerned about a change of rules midstream. But the reality is they did, and so the first pilot came about, and that, knowing because of all of that, a lot of us prepared ourselves, we braced ourselves for trouble. So I have a number of case studies, which I shouldn't be disclosing to you, but it works. Now it's a little too late. What a lot of people did prior to the beginning, to the onset of the pilot, the first pilot, was to just partner with somebody else and give the principal applicant role to somebody else in your team and eventually apply. Because in the foundation scheme, they cannot get your budget from an existing CIHR grant that you have that you're sharing with somebody else, and you're not a nominated principal applicant. And she knows I have an example like that in my own portfolio. So that's one way that you can shield some of the funding that you have that's not going to be folded into a foundation grant. And a lot of people use that possibility, and eventually this helped also to foster research in different people's labs. But for those of you who, depending on how broad is your field of research, say cancer research, of course we do have CCSRI, which is a major funder of health research in cancer. So those are always available, and then there are the other calls for proposals. So Giovanna mentioned the complete summary here, which is the part that goes now just as to earmark the end and to properly get the paperwork destined to the appropriate people and different desks at CIHR to assign reviewers, to verify compliance and conflicts of interest and so on. But then you have a second kick at the can with that same complete summary when you submit as part of the proposal. And I you know, it's experience, of course, you know, I always put a lot of emphasis on the summary. Thank you very much. I always put a lot of emphasis on putting together a good summary because that's your business card in your grant application. That's the first thing that people read, and that's the first impression. And first impressions count a lot if you're a reviewer. Another thing that I always remind myself when writing together, and that I mean, at the end of my career, and of course, experience counts a lot. You know, I've been around for quite some time. I have a batting average of 100%, so I never had a grant that I didn't get funded, and not always in the first. You know, you always get better as you resubmit, And CIHR, unlike NIH, which had third strike you're out, at CIHR you can keep on coming, eventually you can refresh your ideas. And I always made the best out of peer review. I always read peer reviews, even though I hated them. Often enough, you know how it is. You know, that's the feeling of being rejected when you get a nasty pink slip, and eventually you see that the reviewer has missed the whole point. And unlike a reviewer of your paper that you submit for publication in your favorite journal, which tends to be in-depth, an expert review on the topic of your paper, this is a completely different story. There's a good chance that you, if you're a mouse geneticist, your grant is going to be read by a molecular biologist, not someone exactly in that same niche of expertise. So there won't be in-depth reviews, and you're not going to see a whole lot of that. And back in the old days of writing grants, you did get a full critique, which helped a great deal. In the new era of foundation grants, you don't get that a whole lot. You get bullet statements, bullet points about what they liked and what they did not like. So it's not going to help you a lot for you to go back to a second kick in the can. And mind you, this is exactly at the core of the grassroots protest that, as you, perhaps many of you have signed, you know, protesting against CIHR. This was all led by, remind me again, the guy from Toronto who's leading all of this, the one I'm talking about, the name escapes me now. That's right, Jim Woodgate. He really excited the masses among ourselves, and we all signed, I don't know how many thousands of signatures. And he got every one of the foundation grant recipients, every one, he didn't miss a single one, every one of the foundation grant recipients to sign, and as demonstration of sympathy for the concerns about the state of peer review, which had decayed enormously. So peer review, which is the cornerstone of how we improve our ideas, how we generate and we improve, we can eventually reorient our thoughts, it was gone. So this was at the core of what CIHR is hearing about these days. So this is going to reflect in the third pilot, if they will stop calling pilot, but at some point they will. But this one, now it's done. All right, good enough. Now it's the real experience. So the second one was a pilot. So this one is the third, which is not a pilot, but it's the real thing. But it's probably not going to benefit from the full review of what the problem of peer reviewer. And what Jim Woodgate wants, and many of us want, is of course to go back to the old concept of face-to-face peer review, which, of course, the dynamic situation, for those of you who have sat in these panels, and many of you have chaired these panels, you know how important it is that back and forth that you go, and an internal reviewer could have missed the whole point, and eventually that person has an opportunity to retreat, and eventually ideas get around, and a final critique eventually is captured and summarized to the investigator. And so those days are past, and some new form is going to have to appear now. Yes?
Do you know if there are non-Canadian reviewers that have participated in this, or is it only Canadian food?
Yeah. So hopefully they're going for more content experts. We want content experts. No, they. CIHR always used international reviewers, American reviewers, back in the days of internal review panels. And the same way that Canadians serve in R01 in study sections at NIH, you serve at study section, right? You know, we also do. I did, Dr. Coelho as well. I mean, many of us have done that. So it's just the reciprocity that makes sense. No, we absolutely need because of the content expertise.
So when you're writing your summary, then you're saying that you kind of have to pitch it to the reviewers or pitch it to.
Yes, so that's my mindset. My mindset is I wordsmith to death everything I write when it's a grant application. Being concise is paramount. But the most important criteria that I keep in mind is that I'm writing to somebody else. So I have to put myself in the mindset of someone who's reading my application. Could be a competitor. So it's a mixture of being humble, at the same time you have to be bold about the ideas that you want to convey, but with a dose of humility that you could be annoying your competitor there in terms of, you know, claims such as the first time that this is done, you know, this sort of thing. Who knows? If this ends up in the wrong hands, you annoy. I mean, there's the mental dilemma from the reader of your application. Maybe, you know, and we all try to be as unbiased as we can when we provide these reviews and conflicts of interest would have been disclosed, but if you're a competitor, you never publish with the person, you're not legitimately in conflict of interest according to the CIHR rules. So I always worry perhaps a little too much about that. Not that you need to follow my experience with that, but I always did that. And I always read, and then that's also the way that I convey to my students and my colleagues. So I wordsmith to that everything, and I always try to read with different mindsets. So I play myself as an actor every time. Okay, so I'm person X, and I know who that person X is, because I know who my competitor is. So how would I react, being person X, researcher X, reading what I just wrote? And then I at the end of the text, I say, that wouldn't come across nicely. So eventually I'll revise my text multiple times.
If I can, I just want to come back to the point you raised about not suggesting a forward reviewer. So what matters is the scores that people review, it's the rankings, right? So if you have one reviewer who's written one application, he's going to read it as number one. If you have a Canadian with both applications and he ranks it as number three, would you be better off going for specialists?
I always favor specialists. So, you know, that's, wouldn't we all, I mean, you, if Without a specialist reading what you wrote, you're at the mercy of being, of having to oversimplify your language, and to be a, let's say if I'm an epidemiologist, let me disclose what I do here for a living. I'm a cancer epidemiologist. So I'm my foundation grant, the title is, and it is I can send it to you by email. A research program on the epidemiology and prevention of human papillomavirus infection and associated cancer. So it's a medley of existing CIHR grants that I had, about three or four, which got folded into one, plus a bunch of new ideas that I wanted for the next 7 years. And all of that I folded into one thing. So it would require expertise on the topic to be able to come out good, because in my impression when I wrote that, you know, I would want an expert to read that, because I'm very proud of my research program and I think it would look good because I do have a good productivity to show. So, but how would, but I must assume that this is not always going to be the case. So it could be, say, for instance, a sociologist, a health system researcher would be reading my application because of perhaps a person works in cancer prevention from a different aspect, let's say, on it could be a biostatistician working on cancer prevention reading my application, and there's a lot of biology in my application which would be missed by a biostatistician, and perhaps some of the biostatistics in my application would be missed by a cancer biologist. So you have to, it's a blend of simplicity and at the same time have been concise, at the same time being bold, being humble, and not be too techy, too geeky. Because then you lose your. It has to be pleasant to read. It has to be almost like a piece of literature, and you know, every sentence follows the other. It has to be a logical path. And you know, the summary is your business card. I mean, that's your entry point for doing all of that. So I'm going on. Let me just go on task by task. Yes. And you're an epidemiologist. Statistician. I beg your pardon. This is fresh. I just got this from the web.
No,
I did this 2 hours ago. That's the beauty of it. We all want it. In fact, this was a dream come true when Foundation Scheme came. Because we're out of the days of 13 single space pages of the CIHR operating grant, which is horrible to read, horrible to write. worse for NIH, 25 single-space pages, they also changed their way of doing things. So this is a wonderful world of being concise, being straight to the story, and because you're also telling them about your productivity, right? So there are two parts of the story. The idea that you're bringing, plus you. Well, who wrote this? The person who wrote this, the instructions, the rules of the game, the rules of engagement were written by CIHR technocrats. I don't want to use the word bureaucrats. The technocrats at CIHR. The reviewers, they have to read the reviewers' instructions. But it's very much the person who reads at the end who will be the judge, right?
So I think that complication
I have mine here if you want to guess and see. I think most people who are going to be going for a foundation scheme, they do have a pipeline of CIHR projects that they want to fold into one. So in many cases, it would be a program of research, wouldn't it? So you would have a portfolio of things, some of which would be a little disconnected, but you make a good point and make them sound like they're connected. And I think that's the story here. You need to show that they're all cohesive and they're part of a continuum because you're going for the 7 years or 5 years, depending on what you want to apply for. And you know that this is risk because if you fail, if you get not a good fund, you cannot apply for a project scheme anymore. It's for an individual idea project. So, yes, reading this, it sounds like it's for a single project, but if you have a collection of projects, you need to make them sound like a program of research, which is exactly what I did here, in fact. And I enumerated them, and I said a little bit about my history. My history, by the way, I was doing this with Transfaculty because my program of research I have done for 20 some odd years with Transfaculty from University of Montreal. So he and I, we had the advantage of synergy because he's the person I have published the most, 70 papers together, the two of us. So we're capitalizing on the things we've done together. The co-students we've trained together, master students for him were PhD students for me and vice versa. So we didn't have a history. And we put that right there in the first paragraph of the application with some of the ideas, covering, the spectrum of research. So there's a lot of flexibility in this, but I think what counts at the end is the proof of the pudding is in the eating. So it's the person who's going to be reading that. It's in the eyes of the beholder there. And if you can make that thing palatable and nice and pleasant, and say, wow, that wow factor at the end, then it's something to be happy about. Then if you can be happy with that, and your colleagues, of course, you always rely on your peers, and those are people who can see outside of your mind and see whether what you conveyed is straightforward enough. And kind of tight, 3,500 characters. So the criteria, and again, I copied all of this from the website, and you saw this in Giovanna's slide. And the nice thing, and I like this at the Foundation Grant, because at ResearchNet, you actually see the criteria right there as you fill up the space. So as you obviously will not be composing your text, you'll be drafting your text in your own word processor. You're not going to be with the research that open in front of you and composing your text because you don't have the editing capability of your word processor. You'll be doing this outside. But at the time when you're filling up the space there in research net, you're going to have a good reminder there of what the criteria are. And I wrote this by actually copying this thing and putting my Word document. So as I'm composing my text, I'm looking at what the reviewers are going to be looking at. So the caliber of the applicant, which is the most important part of phase one, I mean, that's you. You're selling yourself. And 75% of the whole story. And 25% is going to be what you come in phase two, but you're just giving a little bit of an appetizer for what coming in phase two. But in phase one, you have to do a masterful job in selling yourself. And the criteria are very straightforward. I mean, you have to show your productivity. You know, you don't go to Google Scholar to show your H index because that's not a reputable source of doing these things. You know, get things that are count well. You know, do both quantitative and qualitative, highlight the things that you have done. Your funding history and how your funding history was a good bang for the buck in terms of how the return for the money that CIHR has done that. In my case, with Francois, you know, because we've done so many things together, you know, it was easy. We focused on that, but I also wrote a little bit about him and a little bit about me and how independently. I also took a great pleasure in putting an emphasis that, hey, this is one opportunity of uniting two institutions in Montreal, one French, one English, coming together and bringing together in one research program that's very cohesive. So this also, I think, perhaps, was something that the reviewers liked to see, particularly the Quebec ones, they would have liked to see. So this is a major job in selling yourself there without sounding too cocky. If you're proud of what you do, but, you know, dose your language there to put that out, but in a way that people are going to appreciate that. Yes, Nandini. Yes, I was a nominated one. As we have always done, you know, I have all these epidemiology projects and I pay his lab, you know, we pay for his...
This was their 2014 application.
That's right.
Because I applied twice.
No, I applied only once. I applied, we did quite well. We were in 14th in Canada out of 1,700. So we're really top 1% of all the applications. So it was, you know, we did have and I think the history of synergy is something that made us look good there. So leadership is, again, you know, the sort of thing, I mean, the older you are, the more you're going to have to show for because you have trained a lot of people, you have played roles. I took particular care because I know how CIHR reviewers, and they, my experience counts, you know. I have read one too many times that people say, well, Dr. Franco is too busy. He doesn't have time to this. I mean, how can he devote that much time for a project? You know, when you put 10%, you know, remember the percent effort you put in different projects. I'm always worried about that because reviewers can be very pernicious about that because they can actually not take into account that, if you're submitting that, that's because you're perfectly capable of doing that. So being chair of a department, division director, editor of a journal, I had to really be careful in showing that these things which are visible in my CV, people are not going to misread by saying, he has no time to do research, better not fund him. So I put a lot of language in terms of saying, hey, you know, this has been happening, yet it hasn't affected my productivity. And that so that reviewers would see that this would not be an impediment for my using the money that CIHR has given us. So leadership, of course, is one of the three components of that 75%. And then comes your CV, your significance of the contributions. And yes, it is kind of complicated. I remember really being upset because of the restriction with the seven-year story. The perfect example that if you have a leader that you trained in the past, it's unlikely that within 7 years that person is now a full professor somewhere, right? So this is the sort of thing that you're not going to say quantitatively as doing those seven, but you insert into the text. And I remember I have language. You write names in my in the actual significance contributions in training people. I mention names. And people who I'm very proud, who are now chairing committees at CIHR, full professors of chairs of departments, deans of schools, in fact, and here they are. And the significance of contributions, I have quite a bit of names here that I listed. So they're not in the 7 years because they're beyond 7 years. But, you know, you kind of insert them there, and you say Harvard, you know, this one's at Harvard, this one is Albert Einstein College of Medicine, and try to do it very concisely.
I'd like to just correct something. I was asking a question earlier about where you start the training, and this is correct. This is exactly what the CIHR website says. My institution made a mistake, and I was looking at a short list of items, and they had certain the other sections, so I'll have them corrected, but you were right, and that's
I think the major bullet points here, the reviewers are constantly reminded that they need to look at. I mean, I think CIHR is hammering to death that they need to have those criteria in mind. So we might as well be prepared and preempt the strike and just respond to those criteria directly. So bullet number two, has the applicant engaged, trained, or launched a career path of promising individuals in research? Well, you've got to show them. You know, if you, elsewhere in the CV mod you don't have that space to do that, well, sneak yourself in and put that information inside. Then there's productivity. Again, it's part of your CV as you're showing your work. We did have some quantitative stuff that we did for papers published and where you are, and citations are things that impress people. If you have any gems in your CV that people have actually changed policy, have made an impact, committees that you have served. I remember we also put a lot here on how we influence policy in Canada. And in epidemiology, you end up doing these sort of things. But if you're a basic scientist, I mean, you were invited to discussions in Cold Spring Harbor and all of those things that eventually happened. You know, those are gems that you should insert into the application, show the impact that you had in your field of work. So what else can I say here that Giovanna has not already said? You know, I'm mostly speaking, going by memory here, and looking at what I wrote.
I don't understand if there's two questions. There probably is one. Unless it's an error. What salient idea?
You mean the first bullet and the second bullet? Well, again, you know, these things they read. I mean, if you go to the CIHR website, it was written by a technocrat. The whole, and there's a lot of language about knowledge translation, and I don't mean to offend people with have anything with CIHR, but a lot of the basic scientists get very annoyed with the reform, because the reform brought concepts such as knowledge translation, a lot of things that folks in health systems research, they're used to dealing with. I mean, knowledge translation is a commodity that we have to do in epidemiology all the time. So for us, we're comfortable dealing with these things, but the basic scientists got very annoyed with that. So you have to explore some of the ways of translating what that complexity of your work for someone who's going to be sorting out these grant applications, ultimately assigning to reviewers. So you not only want to have something that's pleasant to the final reviewer who's going to be reading and grading your application, but also of that technocrat who's going to be sorting and triaging your application to send to the appropriate place as reading the
drug, that's your work and that's the chair to you. Could that be?
Yeah, that would make sense.
Yeah, we had some of that in ours. Yeah. Well, incidentally, Claudio Coelho asked the question about having industry support. You know, I had one of our projects was co-funded by Mark, was CIHR and Mark in-kind contribution of reagents and vaccines. In our case, was vaccine work. And they also provided a cash contribution. So this... I did mention. In fact, it was a highlight to capitalize on that point. It was a highlight. I mean, mentioned if you have a target, you know, eventually this went to industry, that means that there was an obvious application, knowledge translation for your discovery, and industry picked that up.
No,
but I mentioned that we did have. And CIHR knew all full well because CIHR had to approve my previous budget for one of my projects. Well, I remember how, you know, the nightmare which was. To apportion what CIHR was going to pay and what Merck was going to pay. So yes, it is important. You should be very proud of it. So I you know, that's the vision program direction, also an important point. You need to, okay. So let me wrap up here. So the vision program direction, which is a very important part, because this is going to be the appetizer for that's going to say, well, shall I be invited for phase two or not? So that's essentially the mindset here. Well, here it is. You know, that's what it's going to come next. Up until now, I told about who I have been up until now, but look what I'm going to propose as the next 7 years in for a senior investigator, for 5 years for someone midstream. So this is, again, you know, it doesn't hurt to wordsmith that part to death. You know, be as concise, pack as much language as you can put without seeming too geeky. There's not a complicated sentence in my vision and program direction here. My grandson could read this. I don't think he would have a problem. And it's straightforward. There's nothing technical, I'm just saying the things that I'm going to do, and they have to assume that there's enough sophistication and technicality behind each one of those ideas, because everything I've done so far. So you have to. There's a little bit of a faith situation where you have to assume that the reviewer is going to be smart enough. Well, you know, if I have dealt with the sophisticated part up until now, you know, here's my program of research for the next 7 years. Some people disagree with that. They say, well, you've got to be explicit. Well, I can't be explicit in 3,500 characters. That's this much. So not a whole lot for what you're going to do in the next 7 years. So there's a little bit of that you have to assume that the reviewer is going to understand, because they have to place themselves in your shoes. The other thing that you should not be saying is that, you know, for lack of space, I cannot explain this. You know, that's a little insulting to the reviewer. Of course, the reviewer knows that and knows that you would like to say more. You know, I, this is a little patronizing. So you just assume that the reviewer is as smart as you are, and that they understand the predicament you're in. And reviewers that complain about lack of details will be chastised by CIHR. You can assume that this is going to be the case. They cannot expect more details than you're allowed to put in that particular space.
I find the challenge here is not to repeat what's already in the summary. The summary needs you to say what you're going to say. And here you need to say what you're going to say. And I find this frustrating that in a limited character space, you have to repeat something.
Yeah, and you will. You'll be amazed that you're perfectly capable to do that. So for every one of these character limits for the space that was given. You know, I may have written 5,000 characters for that part. And eventually, as you start wordsmithing and removing, and you're also co-reading, you know, what you wrote for the other sections, sometimes you go back, okay, now it's better to put it here and not there. So go back and you added the previous sections. Only when the whole thing is ready and measured and you do the word character counts and everything, then it's ready to be moved into research net. But this, you're going to be going back and forth on sections to be able to get that synergy, because you don't want to keep repeating yourself. And also it shows a little naivete, right, because you're repeating yourself. So you want to look at this as professional as it can possibly be, and as concise, and at the same time as rich for a reviewer to arrive at what they need to arrive. That's about it. So I'd say it's nice that you have.
Well, thank you, Dr. Frankel. You gave us a few tips that I'm sure you And importantly, he also mentioned if anybody wants to see his application, you can email him or email us, and we'll get that application to you. So as I mentioned, Ellen is not here to give a presentation because her child was sick, but she had prepared a few slides which have, I think, pretty important little tidbits. So Carol is just going to go through them very quickly, if I can get this open. And just a reminder, Ellen is an early career investigator.
Thanks, Giovanna. Hi, everybody. So I'm not Dr. Greenberg. I'm Carol. I'm the official sponsor of research working in Giovanna's team. So I'll do my best to convey Dr. Greenberg's message. She's an assistant professor in the Department of Human Genetics. She's a successful recipient of last year's foundation grant as a new early career investigator. She's provided here some tips both for stage one and stage two. So I'm going to go through that. And, well, if you have questions I can't answer, I'll refer to Dr. Greenberg to clarify that. So this is the outline of our presentation, just a short presentation of herself, and then some general notes about the application format, the evaluation criteria, and CRHR instructions. Some key details of the applications regarding the program you will be proposing, your program experts, the figures, and a conclusion. So Dr. Greenberg, she joined McGill in October 2012 and had 5 months of parental leave in 2013. So at the time of registration, she was 3 years out of the 5 as a new early career investigator. As Giovanna said, this will be assessed as of the date of July 27, 2016 for this year. So the first hint is that basically you have a lot of time to build your program. And this as well could be related to another hint she puts in a bit later with regards to project scheme. So she was successful in the second round of foundation schemes. She did not even advance to the second stage at her first trial. So her second hint is just don't give up, reapply. As an early career investigator, Dr. Greenberg, she didn't hold any CHR operating grants, but she led 2 CHR team grants, which were each $300K per year. These, as you may recall from just what we said previously, are not really taken into account in the baseline. So she was assigned the basic amount, which is, in our case, which was $200K per year. So her baseline was about $975. Okay. She did request a little bit more than that. She requested about 15% more, and in the end got 3% more than her baseline. So that might be an example of, you know, you can get more, not much, but you can get more. One hint, and that was highlighted both by Dr. Franco and Giovanna, is that as an early career investigator, you know, you need to take into account the fact that if you get your foundation, then you're not going to be able to apply to the project scheme. So you have to consider whether you're going to be able to do what you really want to do with those $200K per year for 5 years, and instead of maybe choosing to go through to project scheme and then try and get foundation a bit later, at a later stage. So that's, an equation you have to make by yourself and to make a decision whether to accept your foundation or not. So she published 2 papers in Nature Communication and Genome Biology as a senior author after the first round of her foundation application. So I mean, clearly, a publication, as she says, is key to success. Even first offer papers count. So that's important as well in taking into account with regards to when you decide to apply for your foundation. So with regards to the application itself, the format is quite different and very different actually from to any normal grant outline, and there's very limited space as we've mentioned already. Just make sure you have time to familiarize yourself with the format that's requested ahead of time. Don't try to condense it too much, but rather what you did was using the references section to refer to it in her text. She used those P and U, and she had the full pages of references clearly highlighting publications, seminars, URLs, whatever. And this way she managed to keep space in her own application format.
I don't understand
No, so basically these are under stage one in the text you're going to be filing where you describe your program or even the part where you describe your career and what you've done so far. Then that's where, for example, she indicated, I've advanced the direction of the field by doing this and that. Then she refers to a publication. And so all these, the P1, U1, S2, and S3 in this example, are just listed in our references. And so basically, the reviewers can see in the references page what this refer to, like the meetings she was invited to speak at, the seminar.
So 1, 2, 3, 4, 5.
Oh, it's just, I mean, the letters are not mandatory. For her, it was a good way of, you know, then her references were clearer. Then she had, you know, some references for publications, some references for seminars and webinars. I think it's just a way of outlining the information for the reviewer to, you know, to read it.
I think you also have in your CV, but you also have one page of reference. So I guess there.
I think it's, I mean, if you use only, you know, one and no letter reference, it's fine, it's perfect. It's just that's the way she did it, and looking at the reference page she provided, for me it was clear. I saw, you know, publications and then seminars and then URLs at the end. So
I think that applies by I just found something here that I'm not sure I would advise you to do it, but I assume the first paragraph a tag URL link to 73 papers. So not that the reviewer is obliged to click on it, but if in case the reviewer click on it, it would get to see 73 references. But those are not essential to it. I don't see a single reference here in the text. I don't see a single reference in the text. I don't need a single reference.
I'm not sure that you did it for a lot of references.
Yeah,
you weren't allowed the references.
Oh,
my days
are
even more difficult. As mentioned by Dr. Franco, clearly, you know, make sure that you know what the evaluation criteria are as you write your application. You know, it was very useful to Dr. Bloomberg and helped her in designing the applications. Interestingly, well, you know, something she points out is that the reviewer's evaluation of new investigators improved since, you know, her first trial in first stage and then
the... If they made the rules to allow an investigator, this absolutely...
Yeah.
You're not allowed to
So firstly, so that's the basically what the first comment she got in her first trial regarding leadership, that E++ is still excellent plus, right? But weakness is that she was too early to assess leadership. Moving to the second pilot, basically what changed is that there has been a special cohort built by CHR dedicated to new and early career investigators, and also Dr. Grunberg, as she explained previously, she published two papers, so clearly she's both built on her own career, and then the CHR criteria have changed. So that's how in 2015 she got O++, and there were no weaknesses, and it was considered that the leadership was outstanding considering her, a career stage. Yeah. So regarding the program and vision you're going to be presenting, build a program that is innovative but realistic. Dr. Franco was mentioning be bold, but don't be too ambitious either. List broad questions to be asked, not specific aims to be addressed. It's really you're writing for a program for, here in the case of early investigators, 5 years. It's not a project, so the way she did that is what, as she's written here, that she will direct her research program for the next 5 years, tackling the following questions, and she's put maybe 5 questions under that. And then in her application, she describes how she's going to try to answer broadly those questions. Rely on your background, whether as a postdoc or later, to highlight previously published findings that you're aiming to take to the next level. So she included what she has done since her faculty appointment and how she's intending to bring it to a next level and to which directions. Divide the program in pillars or a section and show that they are independent but also connected. So this way it's to facilitate your reviewers to link their research concept with the approach. She's including in her figures, the first page figure is really, you can really see quite clearly those pillars and how then they interconnect. So I guess that's something that can be useful to use maybe one of your figure pages to try and present your program broadly in a schematic way. Regarding the program experts, so build your program by collaborating with new and established partners which were experts in the field. Show by citation that you have a track record of working together, so that's something established. Highlight the added value of the program, what's going to be new and coming out of these collaborations. Make sure to invite and discuss it with them early. You're preparing for the foundation to apply, you're thinking of including them as a program expert in the program. So she dedicated one-third of the expertise section to describe the team of 8 program experts in her stage 2 application. So out of the 8 program experts, 4 are international experts in her case. I don't think so, no. Yeah. So thank you, Dr. Franco, for your time. Thank you. So that's what she did for all the program experts, basically short paragraphs saying where the collaboration came from and what they were going to bring in the program. So the figures, as I said, so basically only two pages of figures are allowed, which is a good thing for the applicant and the reviewers. So she says it takes time, start early with the layout to make sure you get the messages you want to convey in through the figures. Use the first page to summarize your program with its components with an overview figure. And use the second page to show preliminary results, for example, to highlight that you're capable of executing the program and deliver results. To conclude, there's no right or wrong. There's no magical recipe, as we all know. So build the application that fits you and be confident that you have a winning concept. Get inspiration by requesting previous successful or not successful applicants. There are many different types of writing a successful applications, and reapply. So that's it for Dr. Grunberg's tips. If you have any questions, let us know, and we can check with her. I'm sure she'll be happy to share her application as well. Yeah?
No. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I can confirm that, but I'm pretty sure I read in the adjudication criteria that there's a note to the viewers that the order does not necessarily mean.
Far enough along in my career that I don't want people saying, oh, that's terrible, she has first offer.
No, of course not. Yeah. Okay. Well, I think we can all thank you for your time.
And I want to thank Carol for stepping in for Ellen this morning. Oh. I was just really going to be here, but wasn't easy. We're here. If you guys have any questions, don't hesitate to give us a call. One thing that I've heard often that I think we didn't mention enough is have a lot of people read your application. Mm. Your peers, your significant other, your people in the field, people out of the field. It needs to be your grandson.
Yeah.
Take advantage. It has to sound nice.
This afternoon,
as soon as I get back to my office. Or also, just if you are considering applying for both foundation and project, you may be aware that we have a project session next Wednesday afternoon. Dr. Park will be there, and she will be able to provide a little update about what's going on with the progress, the revolt that's going on. So, and then we'll have a similar session to what today for the project. So thanks again
thank you
for coming on this lovely Friday afternoon.
Enjoy your weekend. Do we need to, I guess we need to do those or something?
Yes.
Do you have Dr. Pringles?
So I'm not really used. You've been amazingly successful in getting money customers. You're poor.
For your budget,
yes.
So you have to ask about that's not going to your customers.
It's not going to be going now.
It doesn't show how competitive you are, but it doesn't
pass as much. Yeah. Okay.
You still have to apply as well.
I wanted to thank you. I guess they are not. No, I'm sure they're fine. I think it's part of your life. Let's go ahead. No, thank you.
good luck with your application. Are you going to go for it?
Are you?
No, I'm not. I'm going to look at
it. I'm going to look at it.
Okay.
If you want, you can. You will get an email, or you want to be registered. So if you just respond to Dalia for the application, and we will be able to send it to you. Or if you want to email Dr. Frank also while you can, then he gets a lot of emails. If you respond, and we probably have it, so I can probably send it to you directly.
Great.
And when I do, I'll just offer him to let him know better.
Thank you so much.
No, but if you're two programmers, you don't have to jump down. Yeah, so just two programmers.
I'm pretty sure it's
only the program leaders that can do
it.
And you work for?
I do.
I don't love you.
Well, you have a genome center before?
Okay. Yes,
that's good.
Yeah.
Good luck.
Take
care. Okay. Giovanna, est-ce que tu sais si le docteur Tremblay, il a eu
du
Canada
Israël? Oui.
Alors, ça compte pas. Ça compte pas.
Hein. Non, il compte pas. Ok, puis, probably the gentleman that we put in the registration, this is really.
You could change it.
Almost.
You could start with
everyone.
All right. Okay.
So, you know, for people, because I started my lab after these reforms, so I don't have an STH
exam.
Yeah. My critics from the first round of pilot, like Ellen, was she doesn't have a STH exam. She has to continue to be a leader, so those were my weaknesses, so those were striking in the right time before, then again. But now I may follow her advice and try again.
Oh, for people that don't have CHR?
Yeah.
I could look. I don't know. I think for new investigators, we have a few new investigators that don't have CHR.
That's got it.
Yeah.
Okay.
I could tell you the exact
one. They have Tina Mukana, they have others.
Yeah. Exactly.
But I don't have CHR. So
I think if you have other grants that's nominated, I think that'll. But for sure, it'll impact the budget. The budget of what you can do.
Exactly like her. She has to continue. Yeah, not even.
But did you applied the first year or the second year? Yeah, so the difference also is the streams, right? So the first year you were all judged together.
Yeah, I know.
Whereas the second year, there was a separate.
It was so frustrating.
Yeah, and you only found out after the registration last year. That's the problem.
Oh.
Yeah.
Yeah,
they changed the rule after registration.
Yeah.
So people didn't, or after,
I don't know. I discarded, I said, well, I will get my CHRs and then reapply, but now I'm.
But now they have, so now you're in a specific pool just with early investigators.
Okay, so the ranking and everything
is just
outside.
Yeah. You know, yes.
It's just with
a separate competition,
I mean. I mean, even with the same level, I mean,
people.
Career.
So that'll help, probably.
And the reviewers will be different reviewers, or they will.
No, the reviewers that are reviewing their career will only have early career. That's not true. You will only you will only be ranked against early career.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. And you could apply to both.
Yeah. So I put my registration.
Okay, good luck.
Bye.
Is it good? I think it was okay.
Yes?
I thought so much.
It's okay. That's okay.
Dr. Frank was still here as well. So.
Who's sunglasses? Water. I brought a bottle of water for you.
So should we turn this off or?
I don't know. Do we turn it off?
Yeah.
Do you want it?
Oh, it was for you.
No, I bought three. One for each of us.
Okay, thank you.
Sorry, I should have told you all.
Thank you.